Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 90 of Nerd Pride Radio. 90 years ago this week saw the birth of Malcolm X, right here in Nebraska, Pol Pot, and Yogi Berra. Wait, holy crap, Yogi Berra's still alive? Oh, he totally needs to be on my Deadpool list. I can't. Oh, man, who knew? So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me.
How are you doing today?
I am awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's like 7 other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week, and it has been every week for a while now. Pretty cool, right? To haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my brain anymore. Our sponsor this week, Zelmer Brand Sandwich Inverters. Ever get a delicious-looking sandwich, but then before you can bite into it, you realize, oh no, it's upside down? No longer a problem with Zelmer Brand Sandwich Inverters. Enjoy all your sandwiches right side up, the way God intended. Also works on burgers, pitas, even quesadillas. Before we get into the meat of the podcast, real quick, 90? All right, here's the deal. I was looking up 90 and trying to get some ideas for what I wanted to do for my nerd commentary on the number this week, and here's the one I came up with, because I was looking up, okay, what's 90 years in the future? That's one of the things I tend to do with these. So 90 years in the future, the year 2105, what's going to happen? Okay, and here's the one I came up with. Ready? 90, the number of years we have before Operation Darkstorm. Yeah, quote, "We don't know who struck first, us or them, but we know that it was us that scorched the sky," end quote. Yeah, see, that was Operation Darkstorm from The Matrix in 2105. Humans filled the upper atmosphere with nanites, and they blocked out the sun and cut off the machine's primary power source. And result, we destroyed pretty much all natural life on Earth and created permanent electrical storms in the upper atmosphere that kept the machines from leaving the planet. Yeah, go team human, right? So it was a really cool Matrix reference. I had all the stuff written down, just like you heard there. And then I realized that where I had gotten the link said 2105, Operation Darkstorm. That was on a Wikipedia page. But then when I actually went to the Matrix Wiki, where I got all the extra material from it, they're telling me it was actually in 2095, like 10 years earlier. I'm like, oh, damn it. I can't use that now. And I don't know which source was correct, but I'm voting on the Matrix Wiki, to tell the truth. So too bad. So anyway, it was such a good little piece, and I'm not going to have any other opportunity to use it. So I thought I'd just roll it out here and go, wow. Shoulda, coulda, woulda, right? Okay. Also, before I get into the meat of this podcast, Blood Car. Humongous. Did you ever watch Blood Car? You never got back to me on this. Because if you watch Blood Car, then you need to pick me a Kurosawa film, and I will watch it. I am ready. What do you want me to watch? I will do it. Anything. Even one of the crappy ones. You go right ahead. I'm trusting your opinion on this. You know what? Tell you what. Humongous, even if you haven't watched Blood Car for some ungodly reason, bring me a Kurosawa film. Pick me the very best one. I will only take your recommendation. Let me know. I'll watch it. I'll talk about it here. So I feel like we're missing out on this. This chapter has been left unfinished. So help me out. And then the last thing before we start the real podcast is, yeah, that's right. It's time for yet another installment of our all too frequent segment, Mike Was Wicked Wrong. So when I was talking about the word wicked and how much I like it, and I mentioned that I grew up in New England, and that was in upstate New York, and then someone, Mrs. Darts, had to point out to me that technically New York is not New England. New York is, what is it, Mid-Atlantic? Was that what it was? Anyway, doesn't make any difference. So, not trusting her, obviously. I went and looked it up myself, and turns out, yeah, she's right. It's not officially New England. Damn it. All right, but to my defense, all right, it was Plattsburgh, New York. Plattsburgh, New York, way upstate. It is on Lake Champlain. It is the border between New York and New England, all right? Like, I was way closer to anything in New England than I was to anything important in New York. I mean, New York City was, you know, 7, 8, 9 hours away. We never went to New York City. I've never been there still. We were closer to Montreal. I went to Canada on field trips for school, all right? So, that's my lame attempt to try and justify how wrong I was. But as it turns out, I thought it was New England. So I was wicked wrong. All right. Having said all of that, finally, hold on a second. I need a drink. Oh, way better. Diet Dr. Pepper. Food of the gods. And so if anyone from Dr. Pepper is listening, I am willing to accept sponsorship. All right. Having said that, it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. Something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week. I add it to my master list in my handy-dandy pocket mod, and the best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, straight into the master list. What is first?
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
That's right, it's time for my gaming table. Board games, role-playing games, video games, card games, any games. If it's on my gaming table, I am here to share it with you. Yeah, I know, last week I said I would open up this week with the Nerd Rage. But I couldn't because I'm so excited about Gen Con. You know why? Because today is May 17th while I'm recording, and that means that today is the first day they opened up event registration for Gen Con, and that's what I've been doing. And I'm so excited. It's going to be a great time. Haven't signed up for a whole lot yet, but we did coordinate efforts. And so me and my son and Eliahad and Darks, all four of us got signed up for a Pathfinder game called Weeby Goblins. And in particular, Weeby Goblins 3, because apparently they're running three different versions of it at different times. And we're really excited. A Pathfinder game where we get to play as goblins and go murder humans and destroy stuff is going to be awesome. So we got into that. And then I also made sure that we're scheduling around the costume contest because I love the costumes, always have. And we're going to go see Whose Run Is It Anyway? Improv show based around playing Shadowrun. So I'm looking forward to that. And then I still need to sign up for some other stuff. I need to get into at least a couple more games, but I don't know what. I want to try some new stuff, things we haven't tried before. I may try Call of Cthulhu. I know it's an older game, but although there's probably new versions that I'm just not aware of. I've always wanted to play Cthulhu and never have. So maybe doing that. But anyway, I'm just super, super excited about Gen Con. It's all coming together. Everything's going to work out. It's going to be awesome. So, but that's it for my gaming tip. Don't really want to dwell too much because I really do have to get into the Nerd Rage. So let's just do it. Uh-oh, get the little ones out of the room. Make sure you're sitting down for this.
Nerd Rage came flashing back, and I just looked at him and went, "Rrr!"
That's right, it's time for some...
Sometimes I tell you!
Turn it. I'm... Oh. Sitting there in silence, I even put it on pause because I kind of need to clear my throat, need to get a drink, getting all ready. And I turn, and she's just staring at me. And I'm like, oh, sorry. I said, I'm just getting myself together because I know this is going to be a long segment and I just want to make sure, you know, I'm prepared for it. Do you need something? And she's like, nope, I'm just waiting. Apparently that's what she was waiting for. So let me try this again. That's right. It's time for some Nerd Rage. And don't let any of that distract from the fact that this is a real Nerd Rage and it's supposed to be taken seriously, darn you. So, God darn it. Now I've completely lost my rhythm. I'm sorry, people. Let me try again. Hold on. One more time. Ready? Nerd Rage. All right. I was listening to Chris Hardwick on the Nerdist podcast, which I enjoy. And if you're going to snicker over there, I'm not going to get anywhere with this. Stop it. She's killing me. All right. Anyway, I'm listening to Chris Hardwick, and he brought up an interesting point, and I've just been kind of obsessing about it for the last week or so since I heard him talk about it. And it was all about sports talk. All right. If you're at a gathering party, whether it's a family event or office party or whatever, but it's a mixed group that are coming together for whatever reason. You want to make conversation. What are the safe topics? The safe topics generally are weather and sports. That's really about the only thing you can safely talk about in mixed company, especially if you're not sure, you know, where everybody falls on certain things. And okay, and maybe you can do current events that don't involve like politics or religion or whatever. But even those are tough because it's hard to bring up, oh, did you hear about that kidnapped child? Or, oh, what about that string of fires downtown or whatever without someone turning into some, you know, blaming our lack of gun control or blaming religious conservatives or, you know, whatever. Too easy for things to turn political. But weather and sports, that's pretty safe. You never talk about a bad sports run and suddenly have everyone in the room going, oh, yeah, great, thanks, Obamacare. See, it's a safe topic. It's not going to turn to religion. It's not going to turn. All right. But truth in advertising. You could always talk about movies and TV shows, maybe. But here's the thing. Why is it always sports? I mean, why can't I talk about Star Wars in mixed company? I mean, or any nerd topic, really. But let's start with Star Wars in particular, because everyone knows Star Wars, all right? It's not even, you know, everybody knows Star Wars. Most everybody has seen Star Wars at some point, are at least familiar with two or three of the characters. You know, they maybe haven't seen all of them, but, you know, 99% of the people have seen the original, and they know some of the stuff going on. More people know Star Wars than would know, you know, professional basketball, for example, all right? But if I start sharing and discussing my opinions of the Star Wars franchise in mixed company with the same fervor and breadth of knowledge that they use when they're talking about college football coaches, for example, suddenly I'm a freak, all right? Because I will sit there. I don't know how many times I've been in the room with people who are talking sports, and it's not just that they know all the teams, professional and college. They know all the teams. They know key players on every team. They know all the coaches by name and sometimes even the assistant coaches, managers, owners, school presidents, whoever's in charge. They know all this stuff and they can talk about the politics of who got, you know, who's getting moved to where or why they need to be running these sorts of plays or what. I mean, for sports guys, this is their Pokemon. All right. They know this stuff backwards and forwards. They're really invested in it. All right. And let me tell you what, they have contributed exactly as much to their team's winning as I've contributed to the script for the next Star Wars movie. All right. So it's just they're big fans and they know lots about it. And so when you're in mixed company, suddenly it's cool to bring out your sports talk and nobody questions that. Everybody goes back and forth. And in fact, even if people don't know sports very well, they're still impressed that you know so much about it. And I don't know about the rest of you, but I have been in situations where people are talking sports and in my mind, I'm just following the conversation, just watching it back and forth, amazed at how much they know. And in my own mind, I'm reeling through, what do I know about sports? What do I know? Is there any way I can contribute to this conversation? Throw in a little bit of something that makes it look like I'm not a complete idiot on the topic. You know, make it look like I'm at least vaguely familiar with the idea of moving a ball to an end zone, you know, something. But if I were to have someone else who shared my passion for Star Wars or whatever, or Dungeons and Dragons or planets or any of the nerd topics I talk about here on the show, if I start getting into those as deeply as they're getting into sports, would they be sitting over there racking their brains, trying to come up with a good, you know, a good way to pitch into the conversation so they didn't feel left out, so we didn't think they were idiots? No, in general, and they will quite openly do this. It's, I don't know shit about that. Whatever. I mean, it's very clear that, well, you're talking nerd topics, whatever. And they'll openly just blow it off, dismiss it. And why? Why is sports talk and people who have obsessive amounts of knowledge about sports and sports stats and players and coaches and all that, why is that viewed with some measure of respect? Like enough that people want to fit into that. They don't want to be left out. And yet, you know, having the exact same knowledge about Pokemon or philosophers or Baroque music or whatever it is that we're interested in, why does that not carry the same measure of weight? I mean, when I talk about planets and I talk about dwarf planets and astronomy and just space travel in general and all this stuff, man, and I can go on forever. I mean, if someone's showing a little bit of interest in it, I will talk their ear off about it. Why does that not garner the same level of respect as, you know, knowing the rankings of all of the college football teams? I don't get it. And not that we're necessarily any better than anybody else, by the way. As a nerd, they have their obsessive knowledge, and then they blow off anything else as, you know, whatever. All right. We're not, up on some pedestal here. Our high horse is not as high as we think, because what's our defense against that sort of thing is we've gotten to a point where people are starting to actually be proud, taking pride in their lack of knowledge about sports. All right. How many times do we see the t-shirt that says, "Yay team, get the ball through the thing." I'm not a sports guy. Proudly don't know anything about sports. Does that make us any better? That somehow our obsessive knowledge is superior to somebody else's? I mean, even things like pop music, celebrity gossip culture. How many times have you seen people who, you're talking about the latest Taylor Swift song? I don't know how often you talk about the latest Taylor Swift song, but something about pop culture comes up, and you're like, "Oh yeah, Britney Spears." You had no idea, and they are very, very proud to not know anything about pop culture. They're very proud to not know anything about this particular style of music because it's, "Oh come on, it's pop music. It's beneath me. It's why do I care what the Kardashians do? Why But for other people, pop culture is one of their obsessive Pokemon collecting kind of things. And why does that make it any less? You know what I mean? So for me, I just wish we could be more open-minded, rather than dismissing stuff that we're not well-versed on. Because look, I get it. Someone starts talking about stuff that's way over your head. It's beyond you. It's an area you've never studied, It is an easy instinctive reaction, just go, "Yeah, well, but why would I? I mean, come on, that's just, but why take the easy way out?" I mean, I wish everybody could show interest in other people's interests. Show their interests the same respect that that you see in a mixed group when someone's talking about sports or when people are talking about cars. I mean, when I hear people talking about cars and, "Oh yeah, well, something's wrong with my car and it's making this kind of noise," and you'll have three guys that are willing to jump up and show off their automotive expertise and go, "Oh really? Is it doing that? Oh yeah, well, I bet that's in your," and I don't even know enough about automobiles to even start pretending that I could make up a conversation like this. But I'm jealous of those guys. I wish I knew more about cars because that's super useful information. All right. That's the kind of thing that I wish I knew something about, because then when my car is making that noise or that light comes on or whatever, I might have an idea about where to start. Unfortunately, I got Google for that and I'm learning. But, it's not just that. Why aren't we showing people that kind of respect when they get into their little nerd topics? All right. I mean, if we're ignorant on something, but someone else is really knowledgeable and really passionate about it, then we should be there learning something. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's like I say, maybe it's just that I just really, really, really want to talk about Dungeons and Dragons in mixed company and I can't. I don't know. But that's what I was getting on about. And like I say, it's just this idea that, we think, because nerd culture has gotten really, really popular. Nerd culture is suddenly in vogue right now. And again, like I say every time I bring up a topic like this, I don't want to go on and on about how we're some kind of oppressed minority and how nerds have it so bad and all this, because, look, we're making lots of inroads into pop culture. Nerd culture is gaining some respect in different areas. It's more recognized. But even then, even the oppression that we have faced, it's just not real oppression. I mean, it's not nearly all that bad. You know what I mean? Anyway, you know what I mean. Now I lost my train of thought. That was the point that Chris Hardwick had made at the same time, is that as much as it seems like nerd culture is more accepted, it's still the kind of thing where, nerd culture can be cool. Watching the Avengers or Guardians of the Galaxy can be cool. Knowing a little something about Firefly, that can be cool. But show too much knowledge about it? No, you're still a nerd. You're still, I mean, seriously. Come on, I don't know anything about that. What are you talking about? That's the, and yet you show that kind of knowledge about, again, sports, on any topic in sports. Oh, yeah, no, that's respected. You show that level of knowledge about comic books? Yeah, not so much. It's as if your investment in comic books, the years that you've spent reading and watching the movies and putting yourself into it, and that you know so much about it, it's as if all those years of that invested knowledge are somehow wasted. That oh, yeah, great. Yeah, now you have vast amounts of trivia knowledge about comic book. Great, who cares? Well, yeah, but you can say the same thing about sports. Where is that useful to you other than talking sports with other people? You know what I mean? It's all, like I say, it's all collecting Pokemon, every bit of it. And I think we should be proud of the stuff that we're into, excited to talk about it, but we should also be open to sharing with other people and to listening to them when they go on about their nerd topic that you don't really, you know, you've never really delved into before. But again, maybe you can learn some. Anyway, I'm repeating myself. It's time to move on. You know what's up next?
Fingertips, fingertips, fingertips.
Hey, it's time for fingertips. I'm just doing a little bit of cleanup from my pocket mod here. I've got a bunch of stuff that I've jotted down that does not in any way amount to an actual topic, but it's interesting and I wanted to bring it up to you, so that's what I'm going to do. First one I've got on the list, I am in my wife's classroom right now, but when this story takes place, I was in my wife's classroom, about a month ago, and the person that she shares this room with cleans up her side of the room all the time, and usually does not get as far as getting all the way over to my wife's side of the room. And so therefore, and it always bugs my wife that she feels like her side of the room might look a little bit shabbier because she didn't have time to get out the dusting spray and do the whole business. And so she's getting in, she's getting set up, and I had some podcast stuff to do and just goofing around. The kids had all their homework done and they were out playing, so I had some free time. And so I went over and I grabbed the dusting spray and I started wiping down tables and stuff. And she's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "Well, I got some free time. I figured, you know, before I start diving into the internet or whatever, I figured I'd clean up a little bit. What is it going to take me, 5 minutes? And she says, and I'm quoting here, she says, "Oh, you are earning so many brownie points." And then she just stares off into space. And I'm like, "What?" She goes, brownies. It was such a Homer moment. It was really, really funny. And so I wrote down, pizza, brownies, and then, of course, that's not a full topic, so it's just been sitting there on the master list with nowhere to go. So I thought I would share that. Second one, Bruce Jenner. Bruce Jenner is going through a transition right now. He's been in all the news if you're not familiar with pop culture. Bruce Jenner, decathlon star from my childhood. He was an Olympic gold medalist in the decathlon, and he was everybody's hero, and he was on the Wheaties box back then. And in recent years, he has resurfaced into the spotlight because he's married to the Kardashian matriarch, and so therefore he's part of the Kardashian family, and he's been on the reality shows and all this. And now most recently, there had been rumors for a long time that Bruce Jenner, because it looked like he'd had some surgery and all this other stuff, and it looked like he's trying to become a woman. And Bruce Jenner finally comes out and admits that, yes, I am transitioning to a woman. I am transgendered, and I am transitioning to become a woman. And so this has been all over. And we were talking about it with our third son, Eli, who is almost 12 now. And we're talking with Eli about it. And one of us said something about Bruce Jenner transitioning. He wants to become a woman. And when we said he wants to become a woman, Eli stopped us and said, "You mean she?" "Oh, yeah, no, I guess that's right. That's right. Bruce Jenner is not, I guess in these cases, if you are transgender, it's not that he is becoming a woman. It's that he considers himself to be a woman, and now he's outwardly transitioning so that everyone else can see him the way he sees himself or herself." See, I'm doing it again. And it was kind of cool to have the 11-year-old point that out to me. I was very proud of him for that. And after he said something, I started watching the tabloids because Bruce Jenner is all over the tabloids. And universally, whether it's The Inquirer or People magazine or Us Weekly or any of these, all of them, if they use a pronoun to refer to him, all of them are referring to Bruce Jenner as a he. See, I just did it again myself and said him, and it should be her. And it is a tough thing. And I'm just amazed that all of these magazines and newspapers are all referring to Bruce Jenner as a male, even though Bruce Jenner has clearly stated that she is female at this point. Weird. So again, that was another little point. It wasn't a full topic, but I was very proud of Eli, and I wanted to share with you guys. So there you go. My wife and I were at Hoo Hot the other night, and two things about Hoo Hot. One, they had the menu cards on the tables. I don't know if you've seen the menu cards. They come out every once in a while. And they give you suggestions for how to put your meal together. You know, what meats and vegetables you should put in, what kind of noodles. And then, oh, here's the sauces that should go on top of that, blah, blah, blah. And we had fun looking through them. Not that I would ever use any of them. I do about the same thing every time I go. But it was interesting to look through their suggestions. And on one of the cards, it had asparagus. Oh, my wife loves asparagus, and she was so disappointed because we've been to many different hoo-hots over the years, and we've never once seen asparagus up there on the buffet. So we were very disappointed in them. But apparently it shows up somewhere. We asked the waitress. She said, yeah, some of them have it. We never do. So, and I'm like, well, then why do you have the card here? All right, but that's not the point. The real point of this story is every time I go through hoo-hot, I get my plate, grill it up. When I get around to the end and they hand me my food back, there's always the little extras at the very end where you can put on some seeds or some chow mein noodles or whatever else they have on those little things over there. And I always add a whole bunch of chow mein noodles. I like the crunch. I like the texture. It works really well for me. So I always add chow mein noodles to my hoo-hot when I'm after it's been grilled. And the last three times now that we've been to hoo-hot, I've been watching, and each time, because I suspected this, but I wanted to pay attention, I would get my chow mein noodles, and then I would be careful about where I put the little chow mein tongs, where I put them back, look at the level of it, go back. I go up for three plates. I try and get smaller plates so that I can go up three times, so that in case you get the recipe wrong one time, you can kind of adjust it. Oh, yeah, whatever. I do. I try and go a little smaller. She's over there making fun of me. She thinks I'm a big fat pig, apparently. See, that got her attention. Okay. But anyway, I go up three times, and the last three times I've been there, on my second trip, my third trip, the tongs and the chow mein never move from when I get them. I am the only person, when I'm in the restaurant, I am the only person that eats chow mein. And what this tells me is, if I extrapolate that out, that means I am the only person who goes to hoo-hot who uses the chow mein noodles. The only one. Which means that every hoo-hot in the country carries chow mein just in case I show up. That makes me pretty important. I feel pretty good about that. Weird, but I feel pretty good about that. Next one on my fingertips list. Pete from the Me Like Trivia podcast showed up on our website to ask, hey, is Modern Major General the first real nerd song ever? The first song to celebrate nerd culture and celebrate pointless trivia knowledge? And as far as I can tell, I think so. And that's really cool. I mean, it's like written in the 19th century. That's pretty good. So again, interesting point. Can't make a whole topic out of it, but I'll share it with you guys. Last thing on my list. And this is the last of my fingertips. We went to see Avengers the other night. And that's not what this story is about. But we go to see Avengers, and the movie theater we go to gives you free refills on large popcorn and free refills on large soda. And the soda we never get refills on, because how many times do you want to get up to pee in the middle of the film? Yeah, exactly. None would be the optimal answer. So, therefore, we don't get refills on the pop. But, or soda, if you prefer. But with the popcorn, there's six of us going to a movie together. You order a large butter popcorn, and then they'll give you little tiny popcorn holders for free. So we'll grab one giant large butter popcorn, and then five of the little tiny boxes for holding popcorn. We'll grab five of those, open them up, set them up, and then we get in the movie. And before the previews even start, We fill up all of those little boxes, all right? And then we sit there and we snack during the previews. And then before the movie starts, oh, look, bag's empty. Go up and get a refill right now before the thing starts. So now everyone has a full little box of popcorn. Plus, we've got a whole bag here to refill people during the film if they need it. It's awesome. So I go back up to get our refill on the popcorn. And as I'm passing by the ticket taker guy, he recognizes me and waves me through because he knew I'd already been in. And he said something as I'm coming by. He said something about, how you doing tonight? And I said, I am well, thank you. And he said, wow, nice grammar. And I'm like, that is a compliment you never get. How many times in your life have you been talking to somebody and their comment is, wow, nice grammar. Good job. I'm like, really? Really? I'm like, well, you're a school teacher. Of course you say it regularly. But this is just some random jerk who works at a movie theater. Those guys are all jerks, by the way. I only say that because Jacob, who doesn't listen to this and he'll never hear me say it, but in case he does, Jacob worked at the theater. That, in fact, that very same theater, he worked there for like 3 years. And he loved that job for a while. And then eventually, you know, you're ready to move on and get out. But anyway, I just, again, nice grammar. And that's something that just, that one in particular, when someone asks how you're doing, the standard response is, I'm good. Or better yet, I'm great. Or I am awesome. But my dad always pointed out that, no, you never say I'm good. The proper answer is I am well, because it's an adverb. And somehow that sunk in with me. And so for 20 years now, whenever someone asks me how I'm doing, I generally say I'm well, unless it's on a podcast, in which case I'm awesome, obviously. And I don't know, something I've just always done. And so to have someone compliment me on it, oh, 20 years of effort finally pays off. How cool was that? All right, anyway, those are my fingertips stories. Let's get some creepy music to take us out of this.
Fingertips. Fingertips.
Okay, now that the creepy music is done, I won't repeat it, but apparently we're not done with that topic, because as I'm speaking and going on and about my good grammar, my wife is busy looking stuff up to prove that I'm wrong. And it turns out that Mike was wrong, and all the other grammar Nazis who've pointed this out over the years. Apparently, and I should have known this if I just thought about it a little bit, but I've never given it enough critical thought. Apparently, if someone asks how you're doing, you can say, I am good, and it is perfectly grammatically correct, as well as, I am awesome, for example. Because, in this particular case, good or well, whichever one you use, is not modifying the verb am, so it doesn't have to be an adverb. It's am is a linking verb that is linking the subject, I, to the predicate adjective. So, for example, just as you could say I am pretty, and I am pretty, pretty is an adjective, and it's perfectly grammatically correct to say I am pretty because pretty is modifying I, me. So in the exact same sense, I am awesome, I am good, I am great. The adjective is modifying the subject, I. It's a linking verb. Oh, man, I can't believe I had this wrong all these years. All right, so anyway, Mike was wrong, and my wife is pedantic. So having said all of that, I now have to roll down in my list to see what's next because I have no clue anymore. Let's see. Oh, you know what? I was going to do a science fiction double feature and talk about the Avengers, but I don't actually have a second movie to talk about. Although I could talk about Mad Max a little bit. We'll see. Avengers, by the way, just Avengers, awesome. The new Avengers, Age of Ultron, it's awesome. Go see it. Have fun. I have heard people who didn't like it. It's only getting like 74-75% on Rotten Tomatoes, which for a Marvel movie makes it a little on the low side, but still a positively reviewed movie. And Avengers Age of Ultron, the criticism I hear of it is, yeah, you know what, Marvel keeps trotting out the same formula over and over, and while they do it very well, and they do, yeah, it's still the same formula. That, yes, you've got your big overarching world-threatening plot, and you weave in the personal stories and humor, especially the humor. Joss Whedon is really good at this. Guardians of the Galaxy was really good at this. Weaving in the interpersonal actions, the plot lines, with a lot of humor involved, and then still building up these big action scenes. And ultimately, at the end of all of these big Marvel movies, whether it's the first Avengers, the second Avengers, Thor, the second Thor, or Guardians of the Galaxy, they've done this a lot of times. You do this, multiple characters, interweaving your plot lines, you know, big overarching world-threatening plot line, and at the very end, a huge battle where everybody all comes together and we're all fighting some horde of non-human, but horde of enemies, and non-human, either aliens or robots or some other thing, so that we can safely, as the heroes, decimate them, destroy them, tear them apart limb from limb, you know, all sorts of really great, gritty action scenes that blow things apart without actually killing people. And then, you know, everything's over and we've saved the world and everybody's all happy. And yes, they've used this formula many times. And yet, Age of Ultron did it so well, I don't care that they're reusing the same formula. I don't know how much longer they'll be able to get away with it, but I had a blast. And I knew this criticism going in and I was watching for it. And it, yeah, and it certainly stood out and I could see that, yep, they're doing the same kind of things that they've always done. But I'm so entertained by these characters and I'm so entertained by this story and by Joss Whedon's writing. I was thrilled. I loved every moment of this film. Is there also some criticism that Black Widow is, you know, as the strong female hero is something of a plot device, kind of a damsel in distress? There's a bit of that, but the romantic subplot and the other stuff that goes with it, spoilers, there's a romantic subplot that involves Black Widow. But I found that engaging and fascinating. I was really happy to see that. It was really kind of cool. And to make up for it, they also introduced Scarlet Witch, who is so badass in this film. Scarlet Witch is really cool. She is everything I could have wanted from Scarlet Witch on the screen. She's great. Who would have known that the Olsen twins' little sister would grow up to be such an actress, right? Holy crap. And this is a superhero action movie. I've also seen her in other stuff where she's proven she's a really good actress. But this was just a great movie. A ton of fun. Marvel is still serving up everything exactly to my tastes. They know what I want, and they keep delivering it, and I'm having a great time. So between the TV shows and the movies, well, TV show, it's just Daredevil so far, but they've got other really cool ones coming. I am just thrilled, and I highly recommend going to see Age of Ultron. Go watch it. If you haven't seen it, if you've got a chance to still catch it on the big screen before it leaves, go do it. You're going to have such a good time, really. And, I mean, James Spader as Ultron kills it. He's great. I mean, he's James Spader. That's what he does. James Spader takes a role and makes it larger than life, and he's awesome. He's really good at this. So go watch Age of Ultron. Have a good time. Mad Max, I haven't actually seen the new Mad Max. Fury Road is the subtitle on it. I have not seen Fury Road yet, but and I wasn't even interested in it until I saw a blog post by a guy who is, he's a men's rights advocate, who, I mean, he truly believes that men are superior to women, that women belong in the kitchen, blah, 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 that the feminists or feminazis, however you want to refer to them, are out to, you know, they've got an agenda to destroy the male role models of this society, blah, blah, blah. And he truly believes that because there are strong female characters in this new Mad Max movie. He hasn't actually seen it, but he's heard enough to know that he's never going to watch it. Because there are strong female characters in this, they had feminist consultants to make sure that the movie was respectful and appropriate. And so therefore, he knows that Mad Max has been subverted. This, you know, truly macho piece of American culture has been subverted and degraded, and now he's sure it's filled with nothing but feminist propaganda to try and feminize all the real men in this country, leaving aside the fact that it's not even a piece of American culture because it's Australian in the first place. What is wrong with this guy? But having heard that and having seen the reviews for it, and I'm not reading the reviews, I'm just looking at the numbers, 98% positive reviews for a Mad Max movie? Wow. Suddenly, I'm interested in seeing this. So, haven't watched it yet. Probably won't get it until it comes out on video, but I'm really excited to see Mad Max now. Who knew that would happen? Oh, now that I'm done with it, I realized I did talk about two movies and I never ran the music. Do you guys want the music? All right, we'll do that. Hold on.
Science fiction, double feature.
That's right. Here at Nerd Pride Radio, you get not one, but two movies for the same low, low price. And now we're done with it. All right. And that is the end of the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. Which means, obviously, there's nothing left but the Pod-O-Matic! Sweet, sassy molassie. There's been a change of venue. I'm recording in a new place now, so I suddenly have to recalibrate for the background noise. Hold on. Silence! Oh, that's better. Hot dog, this is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. Where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums, I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And our first number here, oh my goodness, it's double aught. That is spectacular. Let me go to my list, and 00100, why, there it is, it's from Billy Bob. Billy Bob says, have I heard you use the term portal fantasy before? Yeah, you have. What's the appeal? All right, portal fantasy is fantasy stories that involve the protagonist generally travels usually through a magical portal to another world, a magical land. Alice in Wonderland being maybe the most famous, the Narnia Chronicles doing the same sort of thing. What else? The Thomas Covenant series was a great one. The game Portal. No, that's very different. And now that I'm home, Aiden's here. It is portal fantasy is transport to another world. And when I was a kid, those were the first fantasy books that I read, and I've just always been enamored of them. For me, the appeal is just simply that whole transport to another world. It's an escapist sort of thing. It's getting away from this mundane world that we live in and going somewhere magical and wonderful. And specifically, it's appealing because it gives you that possibility of, yeah, okay, I know. I'm just an ordinary person living an ordinary life in this boring, ordinary world. But possibly, just like in these portal fantasies, I could be transported to some magical place, some awesome place, just like the people here. I'm trying to think of some other examples. The Divide books, if you've ever read those. Yeah, they're a little, when you get older, they're a little, little simplistic, I suppose. But, really kind of cool. And they were Aiden's favorite books for a long time when he was young.
Still are in the top 10.
See? Still in his top 10. He loved the Divide series. Even Harry Potter has a lot of that. Harry Potter is not a pure portal fantasy, but it's pretty close. I mean, it's, you know, ordinary kid living in a...
He's traveled by flying car.
Would you hush? He lives in a miserable life, but then all of a sudden someone comes along and tells him, oh, no, look. There's this whole wonderful world of wizards and magic that no one can see, and we'll take you there. And in fact, to get there, you have to get to platform 9 3/4, where you literally push your crap through a post, and suddenly, poof, you're on the other side, and you're in the world of the wizards. So Harry Potter is a lot like that. It's, I don't know, like I say, portal fantasy, it's an escape thing. It's the possibility that you know, you yourself, you know, whatever, you know, kid you are reading this book, could be transported into, you know, Wonderland or wherever. I don't know. I've always liked that. I've always been really enamored of those. I really like portal fantasy. It's one of my favorite genres, and it's overdone. I mean, if you're going to do a new one now, you got to kind of have to have a twist on it, I suppose. But I like it. So, and if you can hear Aiden moaning, he's also sick and feverish right now. So he has the option of going to bed, so he doesn't have to listen to me blather on. But he wanted to be here just in case I needed him, so I appreciate him for that. Right. Much more fun. So, hold on. 83. All right. 83 is right there, and it's from Mrs. Darks. Hey, Mrs. Darks. It says, I was lately thinking of our college years. Our not meaning mine and hers, because I didn't know her in college. But, ah, yes, when Darks and Eliahead were roommates, and how often they discussed or competed in randomness. Do you believe that true randomness in humans exists? Why or why not?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I'm with Aiden on this one. I don't think so. I don't know if you guys can hear him. He's kind of on the couch and facing away and moaning sickly. But he said absolutely not. And I think I agree with him. I think true randomness, I mean, really means that, you know, you're on a knife edge where things could go either way. And I don't think that happens with humans. I think it is very rare that we have a decision point or a moment where things could go this way or things could go that way, depending on what choice you make right this moment. And I don't think that that choice is really ever, you know, a real actual random split. Like, I really could just randomly do one thing or another at this moment. I think our choices are pretty predetermined.
As well, you know, everything we do has to be thought of ahead of time.
Well, yeah, you have to think of it, but what, I mean, is there ever really someone who's split that they really could go either way?
No.
No, see, Aiden's not buying it either. I think we're already predisposed to do things, even when we think that, oh, we really don't care either way. And this is how mentalists do their business, is mentalists can create suggestions in people's heads just by random conversation. There's that word used metaphorically here. But mentalists who are really good at their job, it seems like magic. It seems like mind reading. It seems like they are just absolute geniuses, but it's just a matter of understanding human behavior. And, you know, they have a conversation with you and they gesture this way and they mention a certain keyword and whatever. And then when they ask you to pick something, you know, just, oh, completely at random, it could be anything, then you think of it and they can tell you exactly what you're thinking. They can follow your train of thought and tell you what you were thinking, because the human mind actually goes down certain set paths for a reason. And so even when when you think you're doing something that's quote unquote random, you're not really. You can certainly do things that are unexpected, and you can certainly do things that are so unexpected that they create the shock value required for that type of humor. And it can be really, really effective and funny and fun. But is it truly random? I wouldn't call it true randomness. No. 03, or maybe I'm talking out my ass. It's really hard to tell the difference sometimes.
It's not really 3.
No, I meant about the last question, not about the number that just got rolled. Number 3 is from Ronster. Why do you think bad things happen to people, and do you incorporate this idea into your RPGs? Ooh, that is a good question.
Let's not get on that, because we don't want to give them ideas.
All right, if you're going to talk, you're going to have to get up here and get on the mic. Well, they can't hear you. It's up to you. I mean, dude, you don't have to, but
there's a podcast going on. I gotta get part of it.
All right. All they're hearing is mumbles. Get over here. All right. Hold on just 2 seconds, guys. I'm going to pause here so we can rearrange. Okay, that's better. And he's genuinely feverish. He is sitting next to me. He has his shirt off because he was overheated. And, I mean, the heat pouring off of this kid, I can feel it sitting next to him. It is just crazy. But anyway, why do you think bad things happen to people? I don't know. Bad things happen to people because a lot of it is just situational and it's luck and you never know. But sometimes bad things happen to people because they have not planned accordingly, because they've made poor choices. Bad things can happen for lots of reasons. And sometimes it is through absolutely no fault of your own, and sometimes it's because, yeah, you know what, you totally could have seen that coming if you just thought about it for 2 seconds. And do I incorporate those ideas into my RPGs?
I sure hope not.
Absolutely I do. If they make poor choices in a game, or what I judge to be poor choices, being God and all.
Like leaving Kyle behind? Was that a poor choice?
Well, it was funny, but But yes, to a degree, I incorporate it because I want them to feel that when bad things happen to them, it's because they made poor choices, or it's not even because they made poor choices, but that a lot of the things that are happening to them that seem bad or seem tragic are happening to them because of choices they made. I want them to feel like there are consequences for their actions, that things follow logically, probably even more logically than they would in real life. The truth is, the bread and butter of a role-playing game, the meat of it is trouble. Bad things happening is what motivates a plot. And
like stealing Poro.
Yeah, quite often, bad things happening is what motivates a plot. And so therefore, I want to keep things going by having these bad things that need to be overcome. And it's nice if they think that it's because of their own actions. It's nice if they think that those bad things are as a consequence of something they did. And then they can feel that the whole story is interconnected. But yeah, sometimes it's just I randomly kidnapped their cleric because, well, I needed them to go travel to a certain land. And so therefore, I kidnapped their cleric so they'll go where I need them to go. Sometimes bad things just happen. That's just, dude, it's not my...
No, I'm casting magic. Give me a second.
Yeah, the universe is a weird, mixed-up place. Things just happen. And sometimes bad things happen to good people. Not that that applies to you because you're evil. So therefore, you really should expect exactly what you're getting.
Yeah, but Poro wasn't evil.
Poro is lawful neutral. So, yeah, no, she's just obnoxious. She's not evil.
Eli's not evil. Noah's not evil. Heck, Quillith isn't even evil. I'm the only one.
No, that's right. And you are leading them down a broken, twisted path.
I hope they die, actually.
See what happens to them for following you. 65 is from somebody. Billy Bob again. Billy Bob says, the first album you ever bought.
This doesn't apply to me.
Okay. What would apply to you?
I don't buy music. I don't buy music.
Okay, the first music that you had that you cared about. I mean, whether it was on an iPod or your own playlist or... Yeah, see, kids today, they don't know. The first album I ever bought was a Madonna album. And I don't remember which one. It was the one that had Like a Virgin on it. Was it Like a Virgin? Was that the name of the album as well? Either way, that was my first album. And at the same time that I bought that one, my brother Kyle bought, and we did it, we were living on an Air Force base. We bought it at the base exchange. I remember we were at the BX, and I bought the Madonna album, and Kyle bought, was it a Chicago album, Kyle? I don't know.
As we speak to future Kyle.
No, he's listening.
Is he?
He's listening.
What? Okay, wait. Every Kyle from every time period. The heck, man?
Yeah, see, exactly. No, completely threw off my predictions. My whole schedule is gone. He started listening because, oh, I'm taking a break from my novel. I need to relax and reset. And so I'm listening to the podcast. And although I wasn't sure, I said, if he was a good brother, he'd be listening to all of mine first and then moving on to other podcasts he's missed. But then I thought, well, but maybe he's so OCD that he would actually have to listen to everything in order. No, it turns out he's a good brother and he's catching up on mine first. So he's getting through them. He may even listen to this live for all I know. I have no idea.
Live? Do you ever do anything?
Not live. You know what I mean? Like, as I release it, he may stop. Yeah, exactly. My name's Aiden. I'm pedantic. Okay. We've got it. Anyway, yeah, I think, yeah, Madonna. Whatever album had Like a Virgin on it. 05.
A lot of O's in this one.
Yeah, I noticed that. And I would think that it was stuck, but it keeps switching to other numbers and then going back to a zero. So, weird. Uh-huh. Although, you'll notice that 03 was our third one. 05 is our fifth one. Weird. All right. Number five is from Lucy. Why does the History Channel have to suck so badly? Alright, this is a two-part question, but let's say, why does the History Channel have to suck so badly?
Because apparently aliens are part of our history.
Exactly, because the History Channel doing what they think they have to do in order to sell ads. To gain more viewers in this very competitive cable market, with, you know, YouTube and other distractions online, they are doing what they feel they have to do that is going to be the cheapest way to turn over views and get new advertisers in. That's really what it comes down to. And so, therefore, anything that's even marginally history-related, or sometimes not even history-related at all, but easy to produce and really popular. I mean, Duck Dynasty? Come on. Seriously. Duck Dynasty is not even close. And yet, and I think that's History Channel. Again, I'm not going to go look it up.
The history of people faking being hillbillies.
That's why the History Channel sucks so badly. So, part two of Lucy's question, what would a great History Channel look like in your opinion? A great History Channel, a great A&E, a great Learning Channel, all of those would look like they looked when they first started, or how they looked 5 years after they first started.
I was going to say 10, but...
So when the History Channel first started up, and it was nothing but historical documentaries. That's all they did, and they were routinely pretty boring. I mean, unless you were interested in that subject, and when it first came out, I wasn't. But they kind of figured out their audience and figured out their rhythm, and about 5 years in, I'm guessing, is where, you know, they've really hit their stride and they've got the right balance of shows. But it's still history. It's still documentaries most of the time. And that's what they would look like, in my opinion. I still remember... This is what, 15 years ago, 10 years ago? I can't, it was before they went all exploitative and commercial. So maybe 15 years ago, I don't remember. But I watched on the History Channel, it was late at night, I just came across The History of Sandwiches. Holy crap, a whole documentary on the history of sandwiches, and it was fascinating! I loved it! Oh my god, I could just... Not yet another World War II documentary, or yet, you know, not something that I'd seen before. This was an hour-long historical documentary on something small, sandwiches. And it was brilliant. If you've never read The History of Salt, right, there's a book out on the history of salt, which, by the way, salt, apparently, world-changing is what salt is. Salt, at one time, was power in this world. And fascinating. Some aspect of history you wouldn't have thought about. And I love that stuff. In fact, that would be my perfect History Channel, is doing lots of that. That would be great. Yeah.
I like how watching the sound bites here, you get the loudest when talking about sandwiches.
Yeah. Yeah, well, if you're watching the waveforms on the recording, yes. Sandwiches. Dude, I love sandwiches. I'm excited. Yes, there we go. I've now hit on my perfect History Channel. The perfect History Channel would be like my unknown history segments here. It would have constant features on little aspects of history that maybe most people don't know about, haven't even heard about. You didn't even realize that there was a history there that you were excited about. And yet, there it is. And it's amazing in its detail. It is, but also my perfect History Channel would have a lot of stuff. You know what? You could just play Dan Carlin's Hardcore History Podcast on a History Channel. I don't care if you've got visuals or not. That thing is brilliant and hypnotic. I could listen to Dan Carlin do history forever. And which, by the way, Dan Carlin, if you're listening, anyone else who's familiar with the Hardcore History Podcast, the dude is releasing a podcast every 3 or 4 months for Hardcore History. And when he does, he's putting out 4, 5, sometimes 6 hours at a shot. Dude, seriously, I mean, I know it takes a while to put them out, but have you considered breaking them up? I mean, you've got an imaginary producer there who's helping you. Have him take care of that. Figure out what it takes to, okay, I'm putting out a podcast every 3 months. All right, good. Then when it comes out and I've got this 5.5 hour podcast, let's have my producer cut it down to the right size and just give me, you know, give me an hour and a half a month. Oh, that would be so gorgeous. An hour and a half a month, so we have a nice regular release schedule, and yeah, you're afraid that it ruins your flow? Then great. Before each one, just your producer will tell you, look, here's a summary. Give us a 5-minute intro so we know where we left off. That would be it. You could be giving us an hour, hour and a half a month instead of me waiting forever. But, you know, hey, look, why am I complaining, Dan? Again, I know you're a fan. I'm sure you're listening. I shouldn't complain because I love hardcore history and I will take whatever you give us. So honestly, if you feel that this is the best form for your art, then this is how I will consume. So I shouldn't complain. 38 is from Mrs. Darks again. Mrs. Darks says, how do you feel about the Brontosaurus being a dinosaur again? A little confused. I mean, you know. Oh, by the way, Aiden went to bed. He kind of tried to quietly sneak out so that he wouldn't disturb us, but he went to bed. I thought he was just getting up to get something, and then he disappeared. So, good night, Aiden. Anyway, the Brontosaurus was the go-to dinosaur when I was a kid. When you thought dinosaur, you thought Brontosaurus. T-Rex, we all knew about the T-Rex. We all knew he was the king of the dinosaurs, terrible lizard. Well, dinosaur means terrible lizard. But we all knew Tyrannosaurus Rex. But when you thought dinosaur, you thought Brontosaurus. That was the classic. That was when you watched the Flintstones. You had that, I mean, Bronto was even, you know, the Bronto burger or Bronto ribs. Or that figured into the names of a lot of stuff. The dinosaur on the Sinclair sign for the gas station is a Brontosaurus. That was just what a dinosaur was. And everything else was just some variation of that. But the Brontosaurus was the platonic model of dinosaur. And then that changed, and it became more the Tyrannosaurus. Tyrannosaurus became your big go-to dinosaur. And then we found out that the Brontosaurus wasn't even really a dinosaur. We found that Brontosaurus was non-existent. It was actually, the Brontosaurus was mistakenly identified, and the Brontosaurus fossils all became folded into the Apatosaurus. Apatosaurus? Yeah. And Brontosaurus went away. And even though everyone still thought Brontosaurus for decades, it didn't really exist as a dinosaur. And now it's back and we realize, hey, look, wait, hold on. Differences here, different species. Okay, yeah, Brontosaurus, we're good. We're back. Brontosaurus is back. And for me, it feels weird. It feels kind of fake. And, I mean, I'm happy. Look, any new discovery is furthering our knowledge and making this world a more interesting place, and I love that. But it's taking me a little bit to get used to Brontosaurus being a dinosaur again. It just doesn't sound right. It's as if someone, you know, it's as if someone said, no. We identified these, and turns out it's a unicorn. Like saying that, yeah, oh, hey, look, we found the fossils that show that these proto-horses that we thought were just proto-horses. No, they were actually unicorns. Turns out, yeah, it was a little offshoot, and they were real unicorns, and we've just been misidentifying them for years. And that's bizarre, because unicorn just feels patently impossible. You know what I mean? I mean, I know it's not that far-fetched, but it just feels unnaturally wrong. And yet, oh, suddenly it's real? And that's how Brontosaurus is for me. Brontosaurus just feels like a mythical creature. And suddenly you're telling me that, oh, no, we had dragons. Honest. Yeah, it's just not quite right. But I'll get used to it. I'll get used to it, and my grandkids are all going to grow up knowing that Brontosaurus is a real thing, and they're going to be happy about that. And so I will be, too. I mean, again, it makes the world more interesting. 78 is... It's from Billy Bob again. Wow, Dominate Man. Billy Bob says, when a series is not released in chronological order, like, I'll finish reading. I'm sorry. I shouldn't question questions before I get to the point. Would you prefer to read/watch, okay, I guess that answers my question, in chronological order? Or do you prefer the order in which they were released? And then he gives examples. Star Wars, Indiana Jones, Narnia. Yeah, Indiana Jones. Some part of me feels like I vaguely knew this, but I think this was on the FilmSack podcast. They pointed out that the Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom, the second movie, actually takes place before the first movie. So and for some reason I feel like I vaguely knew that, but maybe I didn't. Anyway, I was still surprised when I heard them say it. All right, so anyway, when you've got something like Star Wars or the Narnia Chronicles, which I was just mentioning earlier in Portal Fantasy, do I prefer to read them or watch them in chronological order, or the order in which they were released? And I will tell you unequivocally, I would rather read them in the order they were released. Because the order they were released is the order in which the author intended for you to take them in. So, for example, the Narnia series. The Narnia series is 5 books in straight chronological order that work really well. And then there are 2 side stories. That is, there's A Horse and His Boy, which really, I can't remember exactly where that takes place. I think it takes place between book 1 and book 2. But A Horse and His Boy, it really doesn't matter where you read that because it's just not directly connected to all the rest of them in the same way. And then there's also The Magician's Nephew, which is book 6 as he wrote them. But Magician's Nephew is actually a prequel that takes place well before everything else. And that's how he wrote them, is that Horse and His Boy was book 5, and Magician's Nephew was book 6, and then finally Last Battle, and he wraps them all up. So they were written out of order. But I have seen them packaged when you go to buy them. I've seen them now packaged where you can buy all 7 books in the series, and they are ordered with Magician's Nephew being book number 1, because chronologically it took place first as a prequel, and it bugs the crap out of me every time I see it. I can't stand it, because when things are written out of order, the book 1, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, was written as a standalone book. It was written, you needed no prior knowledge, you jumped right into it, and it goes. All right, you need nothing else, there's the book. All right, book 2 was written assuming that you had probably already read book 1, etc. So by the time you get to Magician's Nephew, by the time you get to book 6, and it's suddenly telling you this prequel, book 6 is written with the understanding that you have already read all the others. And so whether consciously or unconsciously, the author, C.S. Lewis in this case, is writing this story assuming that you know a bunch of stuff. And so thus, when we see certain things happening, you're like, oh, I get it. Oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense. Oh, that's where that lamppost came from. Okay, I get it. All right. And I feel like if you read them out of order and you read, well, you read them in chronological order, it's always in order either way we're talking about. But when you read them in chronological order and you read The Magician's Nephew first, it gives away certain things about Narnia that were supposed to be a surprise when you read book 1, when you read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I don't approve of that. I would much rather read it the way the author wrote it, because then you're at the same place in the building of this series that he was when he put it down. Same thing with the Star Wars movies. The idea that I'm going to watch the episodes in order from episode 1, watch the prequels first, episodes 1, 2, and 3, and then go into Star Wars. You know what? Well, then in Empire, when you have the big dramatic reveal that Darth Vader is really Luke's father, and I understand that everybody already knows that. Everyone knows that that's happened. But let's imagine that my kids didn't know that. Let's imagine that my kids didn't know that, and I'm introducing them to Star Wars. And let's imagine that I was going to actually acknowledge that the prequels existed, and I was going to have them watch all 3 of those as well. If I show them the prequels first, and we watch episodes 1, 2, and 3, then when I get to Empire, they already know that Darth is Luke's father. They could have figured that out. They would have put that together, and it ruins that moment. That's not how that moment was meant to be taken in. All right? They would probably, if they were paying attention and asked enough questions, and my kids ask a lot of questions, they would already know that Luke and Leia are siblings. And so the bit where she kisses him out of spite just to piss off Solo, they would realize that, oh God, they're brother and sister. Oh, that's creepy. And they would know that, and it would ruin how that moment was set up. It would ruin what the original filmmakers intended when they created that scene. And that's bothersome to me. I would much rather take them in order as they were presented. So for me, my kids and I are going to watch Star Wars this coming, well, no, it won't be this weekend because we're going to Texas. I think we're going to take Star Wars with us to Texas. But we're going to watch Star Wars with our kids first, and then assuming that they enjoy Star Wars, and they will, then they'll ask about the next movies. So we'll get Empire. and we'll get Jedi. And then, you know what, if they're really into that, and I assume they will be, but if they are, then great, we'll even move on to the prequels. I'll watch the prequels with my kids, and we'll have a good time. All right, and they'll ask a lot of questions, and I'll tell them what parts I think are stupid, and they'll have their own judgments on stuff, and we'll have a great time. And then that way, when Episode 7 comes out, coming up here, we can all go to it together. And we'll have a great time, or, you know, we'll get it on video together, or however it works out. But we're going to take them in order. That's my preference on things. That's a great question. Did I mark that one down? Oh, yeah, I did. Okay, there we go. Ready? How much time do we have? All right, let's do one more. One more. 72. 72 is from Zimny. Hey, Zim! It says, oh, this is a brain twister. Zimny asks, if you try to fail and you succeed, what have you done? You've failed. I mean, clearly you failed. Ooh, but you just said you succeeded at failing because that's what you were trying to do, so it's a success. So how can you be successful if you fail? Okay, I get it. I get where you're going. But just by the nature of how you asked the question, I'm trying to fail, and I succeeded. Great. I was successful in my failure attempt. I failed successfully. I have no problem with that. I can live with that contradiction. But you know what? That is the very end of the Podomatic. So we're just going to leave it to GLaDOS to give us a recap of this episode.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week is Weezer's in the Garage. And where's the movies one? Ah, science fiction double feature by me first in the Gimme Gimmies. I knew I had another one in there. I think that's it. All right, all of these songs are available on iTunes. Check them out. Buy them. Enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you want to get your very own pocket mod, go to pocketmod.com. You will get instructions there on how to print and fold your very own pocket mod for free. These things are awesome. You really, really need one. If you want to do something nice for this podcast, recommend it to a friend. If you enjoy it, then spread the word. Let other people enjoy it as well. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on my free games page. Instant Game, Animal Ball, Melee, Sandbox Hill, two-thirds of a dozen others. All free. All awesome. All the time. If you want to contact me, you could email me, mike@nerdprideradio.com. I would actually respond to you if you did that, but you could also find me on Twitter, where my handle is @nerdprideradio. Maybe even check out my Facebook page, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. Come on by, click like, 9 seconds out of your busy day. But to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, you send me a message, we will hang out together. We'll be best friends in the world. We'll have fun. Spectacular. Now that that's out of the way, you know what we're up to? A little listener betrayal. Before every show, I go out to my website. I post up, hey, listener betrayal, I'm recording. You guys want to add something? You guys have the opportunity to give me stuff while I'm speaking that I will now read out on the podcast. Let's see what we got. Back to my website. Did anyone respond? And, oh, and I have a private message. Darn it, I got to remember to do that. Listener betrayal? Yes, there's several. All right. The first, oh, wait, hold on. I got to close it down. Otherwise, they'll keep posting things. Done. Awesome. All right, here we go. Come on, slow internet. All right. It says, DM Darks asks, what is the funniest fart you've ever heard? Oh boy, you know, farts are pretty funny in general. So, there's lots of farts that have made me laugh. But, a million Ways to Die in the West. Neil Patrick Harris has, well, it also involves crapping in his own hat. So, I mean, it's kind of a mixed bag, so to speak. But, that one is pretty funny. Neil Patrick Harris totally sold that. I mean, I know it's a stupid poop joke from Seth MacFarlane, and yet he really sold it. I saw A Million Ways to Die in the West with my dad, and we had a great time. We had such a good time watching it. It was really, it was the perfect way to watch a really, really stupid movie. And it was awesome. So anyway, there's probably been funnier farts that I've heard, but that's the first one that comes to my head, as it were. Next comment from Kyle. Kyle says, are you excited to come visit and have our families do a murder mystery party? Oh my God. Yeah, well, I just told you guys I'm going to be in Texas in a week. We'll be leaving Saturday? Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to be in Texas, and it's going to be spectacular. We're going to go see my whole family. So me and my wife and our four kids plus a cousin are going down to Texas to see my parents and Kyle and his wife and their eight children, and we will have an awesome, awesome time. I don't know if my other brother will be there. I hope so. And I do know that we're going to be missing Aaron, my oldest son's fiance. She went with us the last couple of times, and unfortunately she has to be in Costa Rica this year. So, you know, go Aaron. Awesome, but she's going to miss out on the trip. It's too bad. But while we're down there, we're going to have Eli's birthday party, which apparently is going to be zombie-themed. So there will be a brain-shaped cake. There will be zombie makeup and dressing up. There will be Zombieland on the giant outdoor movie screen in my parents' backyard. It's going to be a great time. We're going to have an awesome time. And then, also later in the week, there will be a murder mystery party, a circus-themed murder mystery party. And I've never done a murder mystery party before, so I am super excited to try it out. I'm a clown. I don't know if I'm supposed to tell everybody, but I think it's okay to tell everybody who I am. I'm a clown. Apparently I have a character sheet full of all sorts of information, some of it public, some of it private, and there will be some process by which we exchange information and we try and learn secrets and gain points and I don't know what else. So I've always wanted to try one of these. Really excited. I don't know if they've done one before. I assume they have. That's the kind of thing they would do. But it's going to be great. It's going to be really cool. We're going to take along Cards Against Humanity. I still haven't played Cards Against Humanity yet. Or maybe they already have it. I can't remember. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We're going to have Cards Against Humanity, and we're going to play. And it'll be the first time I get to play. So I'll have a good warm-up before we get to Gen Con. And it's going to be a great time. We also have a secret surprise for the kids, and I can't tell you guys what it's about because my son is probably going to listen to this one. I'm not going to give away the surprise. But we're doing something really cool while we're down there. We're also going to bring along Star Wars, so we may be watching Star Wars as a family one of the nights. It's going to be great. It's going to be really, really great. I love going to Texas. I love seeing my whole family. It's wonderful when we get together. You're exhausted and about 10 pounds heavier when it's all done, but it's totally worth it. It's beautiful. We've got a house on the lake with all sorts of cool toys and equipment and the jet ski and the, oh, it's great stuff. We have a good, good time. So anyway, yes, I'm very much looking forward to that, Kyle. Eliahad has the next comment with, so, what's your preferred road trip musical mix? That's a great question, Eliahad. And you know what? If there is going to be music to be had while we are road tripping, I will trust you to pick music for me because you know music better than I do. You have good taste, and the few things that you have recommended to me, I have always wound up enjoying. So I'm not going to question you, dude. Seriously, anything is cool. In general, when I road trip, my wife has her iPod with her musical mix, which is pretty eclectic. And we just set that thing on shuffle, and generally we like to see how many songs we get through between point A and point B, and it's really kind of cool and fun. But I don't care. For myself, if it were just me on the road, I usually put in a string of podcasts. I make sure I am loaded up on podcasts that, you know, like right now, if I were to look at my phone, I've only got, you know, maybe four that are still queued up that I need to listen to. And then there's some new ones I'm going to try. But basically, it's, okay, when I get caught up on all of my other stuff, then I'll try out a couple of new podcasts and see what happens. And so these episodes have been sitting there for a week, and I haven't gotten to them because I haven't gotten caught up on everything else yet. But if I'm going to go on a big trip, I will go find some podcast I've never listened to before, but that is interesting or something that's, you know, kind of new to me. And I will load up a whole ton of episodes so that I have all sorts of things to choose from. And I podcast. I listen to podcasts all the way. And that's what works best at keeping me awake on a long road trip. Well, actually, what works best at keeping me awake is exciting conversation. So honestly, if I've got someone to talk to and we're having a real engaging conversation, that keeps me awake. That, listening to podcasts, or sunflower seeds. Sunflower seeds are always awesome for keeping you awake because you can't eat sunflower seeds without engaging your brain a little bit. It's really cool. So you know what? If there's going to be music, I may or may not bring along an iPod, but honestly, Eli, man, pick whatever you want. I trust you. It would be awesome. It'd be great. Anything is cool. Talvin has put something up and says, what's the longest you've driven on a single road trip without stopping for breaks longer than a meal or a quick nap? And my battery is about to die. I should probably plug this in. He says, we used to drive from Seattle to northeastern Indiana, a drive of about 40 hours with only stops for gas, food, and restroom breaks. That was before the kids and a perpetual state of sleep deprivation. Yeah, once you have kids, you can't do any of that crap. Once you have kids, you have to have stops for meals that include sitting down for a little bit, maybe letting them go play in the play area, letting them stretch their legs, burn off some energy. It's going to take a while in the bathroom, blah, blah, blah. But I have done 24 hours from Nebraska to Florida to go to spring break, and we've done 24 hours without anything other than absolutely necessary stops. And even then, I mean, we do bathroom breaks, gas up, food is literally, you go through the drive-thru, you get food, you eat on the road. That's 24 hours. But that's 24 hours is also the longest drive I've ever done. So, I mean, my brother and I did a trip back from Texas to Nebraska one time, which is 18 hours it was at that time, and we did that one straight through. So, but yeah, the 24 hours, Nebraska to Florida or Florida to Nebraska, that would be the longest. Talvin also says, Dothan really killed it Thursday night. Okay, hold on. Let me pause. I'm going to go get my power cord because this may take me a little bit to talk about. So give me oh, darn it. I can't find my pause button now because I'm looking at the internet. There it is. Ooh, saved it just in the nick of time. Holy crow. All right, I am back. And what was the question? It was, oh, yeah, Dothan really killed it Thursday night, didn't she? Holy crap, guys. All right, I've been afraid that with all my war stories of our Pathfinder campaign, I know I said I wasn't going to sweat it, and if we had stories to tell, I would just tell the stories because they're often very exciting. And yet, I still kind of worry that I keep bringing up my gaming table, and then my gaming table is always me just talking about how cool my character is and how much fun we had playing, and I'm afraid I'm boring you. But, you know, Talvin brought it up, so I guess I'm going to have to, right? Okay, so we just played on Thursday. And when we left off, we had climbed to the top of the clock tower and we're 200 feet in the air. And that's when the serpent lady hits us. She's been invisible on top of the clock tower. Again, we're 200 feet in the air because we're idiots. We went up in the middle of the frickin' night. We had already used up some of our spells. We had already used up some of our resources. We weren't prepared for this at all. We didn't do any research. We didn't bring anything. We didn't. Yeah, you know what would have helped? You know what would have helped? If you're going to climb a 200-foot clock tower, I don't know. Maybe a half dozen potions of Featherfall? Do you think maybe something that would keep us from dying if we tumbled off the edge of this tower would maybe be a good idea? Maybe. Did we do that? No. No, did we know we were going to the top of a 200-foot tall tower? Yeah, we knew. We knew exactly where we were going. We did it on purpose. Did we bring anything to prepare for that other than some rope? Nope. Nope, not a bit. So here we are at the top of the tower, and the bad guy is invisible, and we realize she's invisible, and we know that she's a snake lady. We're expecting Medusa. And when Pathfinder and Dungeons & Dragons with basic invisibility, you become visible once you attack somebody. And so she becomes visible when she puts her spear through our paladin. I think I told you guys this last week. Yeah, well, that's how she appeared. Spear through the paladin. That was bad. All right. So that's how we left off the cliffhanger the week before. So now we play this week. And all we saw was one hit from her, and we saw the dice rolls, and we saw the amount of damage, and we realized that we are screwed. We are so screwed. By all rights, she should be pitching bodies off the top of this tower left and right. And once we saw her physical form, she is Alamia. She is upper half evil but gorgeous woman and lower half giant serpent. And so she's Alamia. And as it turns out, she's actually even bigger than that, and she's Alamia Matriarch. She's the noble class of the Lamias. More powerful than your common Lamia, which is already pretty powerful. And by the spells she seems to be casting, I'm guessing she's got a few levels of spellcaster on top of being a Lamia Matriarch, so therefore, I don't know what her challenge rating is, but it is way above our pay grade. It is, she outclasses us on a lot of levels. So we're kind of screwed. I've got a long shot in my back pocket. And that's all I got. Nothing else. Otherwise, she's got mirror image going, so there's, from our point of view, there's 9 of her there, and every time you hit, you just randomly, you might pick off an image, but you might hit her. You never know. So our whole strategy is to get in as many hits as possible, try and take out these images so we can get to fighting the real one. And once we know who the real one is, and we've got her isolated, then great. Then we can start turning on the big guns and putting in the huge power attacks. And okay, this is what we're doing. Now, my one thing that I have as a bard, I'm a singer. That's all I do. As an entertainer, the one thing I have is a spell called Cacophonous Call. And this spell is cast directly into the mind of the opponent, so I don't have to worry about all these mirror images running around. It just goes straight to her brain. And if it works, it fills her mind with such a deafening, confusing din that the target, the subject, the victim, becomes nauseated. And nauseated for 6 rounds, 6 turns. Right, that's a long time. 6 rounds, because when you're nauseated in Pathfinder, you can only move. That's all you can do is move. You can't attack. You can't cast a spell. You can't think clearly. So most of the time you just sit, stand there retching, and that's all you can do. This would be devastating if it worked. The problem is, she is extremely powerful, so I'm sure she's got a massive saving throw. So there's a very small chance that this is going to work on her at all. And beyond that, it turns out that she also has spell resistance, which means that even if she misses her saving throw, it may be that she can just ignore it because some magic just bounces right off of her. So, this is a lesson I learned from The Order of the Stick. And if you're not reading The Order of the Stick, you should. Over at giantitp.com. Go read Order of the Stick. Start at the beginning. It's worth your time. But in Order of the Stick, there's one spot where Varsuvius, the wizard, is facing off against a dragon. And Varsuvius' only spell is Suggestion. That's the only spell that he can cast while he's, or she, is transformed into a lizard. That's the only spell available. And as a dragon, the dragon's saving throw is monumental. I mean, it can shake off pretty much anything. But Varsuvius figures, well, it's my only spell, so I can cast it like 20 times. So why don't I just keep casting it, and let's just hope that one time you fail your throw. I mean, you got a 1 in 20 shot that eventually you're going to fail, and this is going to sink in, and I'll have you. So this is my plot with the Lamia. I've taken way too long to explain this. Let's get to the meat of it. So here's my plot. Is I've got Cacophonous Call. It's the one thing I've got that could really devastate her, and I can cast it 4 times, which even at 4 times means, still, odds are in her favor that it's never going to work and that we're going to be screwed on this. But I figure, what the hell? I'll cast it the 4 times I've got. You know, my 30, 40% chance that one of them will take, great. I'll hope for the best. So I do that. First thing off, I change up my song. But then second thing, my second round, second move, I cast this spell, and holy crap, if it didn't work on the very first try, I watched the dice fall. I got so lucky. There's no way we deserved that. Not even for a moment. It was such a long shot. And so, from everyone else's point of view, I mean, again, me, I know what a long shot this is. I know what an absolute bizarre off-the-wall chance this is. But from everyone else's point of view, you know, here we are all in a panic, and Dothan says, Cacophonous Call, done. And boom, battle's over. We won. That was it. One move. She's devastated. We get 6 free rounds to just pick at her because all she can do is run away. And oh, guess what? If she runs away, there's nowhere to go because we're at the top of this massive tower. She can't even if she has some safety spells, some backup stuff that she can do some kind of instant escape, or she can't do them because she can't cast spells, she can't concentrate on anything. Her only business, the only thing she can possibly do is try and run away, and there's nowhere to go. So she's stuck literally just taking our hits until she's dead. And that's what happened. And we even had a tiny debate over, well, she's unconscious and dying. Do we spare her? No, we don't. Because you know what? In 3 more rounds, she's not going to be nauseated. And if she ain't dead, she's killing us. So, no, we were done. So, yes, Dothan saved the day. It was spectacular and awesome and kind of frightening because it's something that I could never repeat. I mean, obviously, we may be forced into a situation where I'm going to have to try, but I couldn't do that again if I wanted to. So I was so thankful because, again, nobody had to die except the bad guy. We got out of it with our skins, thank God. But it was scary, really, really scary. And it was a great dramatic night, and we had an awesome time. So, yes, that was great. Thank you, Talvin. Thank you for giving me another excuse to talk about me. I love that. And Talvin would also like to take this opportunity to publicly thank DM Darks for running our Pathfinder campaign, and thank you to whoever had the idea to start a Nerd Pride gaming group. Thank you. Yes, absolutely thank you to DM Darks. I am on Talvin's side. As many times as people want to bring this up in the listener betrayal thread, I will completely back them up. I love playing. I am grateful to anyone who's willing to Dungeon Master for me because I love to play. And Darks, you've put together an awesome campaign. We're having a great time. And as for who had the idea to start a Nerd Pride gaming group, I kind of want to take credit for that. It maybe isn't entirely fair, but I kind of want to take credit for that. It was the idea that I had this idea that I wanted a Nerd Pride gaming group and really wanted to get something started, but I didn't want to have to run it. So I just kind of planted some seeds out there, and it turns out that as much as I want to take credit for it, I think once the seeds were out there, I think all of us were on the same page. All of us 30-something, 40-something people who wish we had time to play like we used to, but now, hey, look, the tools are here to play online, and I think we were all in the same place. All of us had this same motivation of saying, you know what? We could do this. We could make this work. And it was a real melding of minds that we all came together at the same time and went, yes, let's do it. And just thank God to Darks for stepping up to run it, because once we had someone to run it, everyone else, hell, our job is easy. All we have to do is make a character and show up, you know, and not to say it's easy to schedule around everybody, and we have a tough time sometimes getting them all together. But in general, if Darks is willing to put in all that background work, the rest of us are thrilled to be there and make it happen. This is great. So, I mean, again, I kind of want to take credit for it, but I know that that's unfair because we were all there and we all kind of, like I say, it's just the moment was right. It was something that we should have done 5 years ago and we just never did. And now it's perfect. It's really, really great. I'm thankful for this opportunity. So, again, thanks for bringing it up, Dalvin. And then the next post is from me. We're done. Say goodnight, R2. Good night, R2.